Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the Tone and Sculpt podcast. It's your girl Chrissy Chella, and we are still quarantined. We are still home, but with everything going on, guys, everything is going on right now. And you know, I think this is an eye-opening year for all of us, and I think it's such incredible time for us to come together more than ever. On today's podcast, I have a woman that is honestly, when I can't express to you how truly inspirational she is. She has spent 12 years increasing employment of diverse talent. She has launched her very own charity. She has been awarded an MBE in 2020, New Year's Honours List for your services to diversity and inclusion. I have with me Joanna Abbey. Is that how I say your surname?
Yeah, it's fine to say it like that. My dad would probably say Abbey, but you Abbey can say
it. Is that right? Abbey. Yeah. That's perfect. Joanna, we spoke briefly before we started recording. Honestly, guys, Joanna is a woman you need to be following, you need to be listening to. Everything that she's done and everything that she is doing, it is basically the definition of actions speak louder than words. We talk about what we're going to be doing for diversity and what we want to do as brands, as especially me as a business owner. But Joanna puts everything in perspective, that actions truly do speak louder than words. So Joanna, thank you so much for taking the time to be here and being on this podcast with me.
Well, thank you. And that was such a nice introduction. I feel all warm inside. So thanks very much.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Okay, Joanna, so let's kick start. Tell me a bit about yourself so the audience can know who you are and exactly what you stand for.
Yeah, so I'm Joanna Abbey. I am 33. I run Blue Moon, which is a diversity and inclusion consultancy practice, and we have an executive search offering. I started off my career in the creative industries, and so as a journalist, and so a lot of our work to begin with in the early years, so we launched back in 2008, was focused on the creative industries. But over time, the success we had within the creative sector has seen us branch into financial services, retail, the civil service, the Magic Circle law firms, the education sector, engineering, construction. So I have a real trading. So I have a real mix of businesses that I work with. I've always been very committed to inclusion and to trying to understand what barriers are in place for certain people within society and what makes it difficult for them to compete, if you like, on a level playing field, not just from a recruitment perspective, but actually from a just in terms of opportunities and the way that they're treated within the workplace. So, I mean, as I said, I started off in journalism. I worked in women's magazines, and then I went into television and radio. And my focus was always on sort of news, current affairs and showbiz and entertainment. And so I noticed really, really quickly that it was very difficult for people from low socioeconomic backgrounds like my background to be able to get into the journalism sector, purely because it was so much unpaid work and you had to, you know, kind of, it was based on nepotism and who you knew, etc. So that was what kind of inspired all of my sort of career. But for a long time, while I was a journalist, I was running my organisation at the same time. So for about a decade, I probably lived on about 4 or 5 hours sleep. And I would go to the office, do my job.
Sounds familiar. Yeah. Sounds very familiar to me. That's what I do now.
It's one that when you're building it, it really is that. You can't do anything unless you really, really love it, because it's exhausting, it's tough. Obviously, it's amazing. But in the days when it's not amazing, it has to really be something you love to keep it going. And it's quite a tireless, if you like, and relentless effort. And I don't say that with resentment. I say that with just literally it's nonstop.
It is nonstop, but that's because you truly believe in something with every fiber in your body. And, you know, you truly believe that, you know, as much as it's work, it's not work for you. It's your passion. And when you have such a pure passion for something, you just keep on going. You don't even think about the time.
Absolutely. Everyone always says to me, like, I really don't feel like I have a job. I really don't. I've got so many, obviously what I do pays my bills, but for a really long time, my journalism career paid my bills and everything else I did actually cost me. But I just felt so strongly in it that now, I had to get permission in a way. I remember probably a couple of years ago, I had someone sort of say to me, you know, it wouldn't make you a bad person if you charged businesses for all this work that you do. You know, people have businesses without any real sort of moral purpose or ethical, societal, you know, sort of influence, and charge loads. So don't be ashamed if and sort of gave me permission in a way that, if I charged, I could scale and I'd have more impact.
Yeah, and as a result of that, you do, you know?
Yeah, so now I'm really proud of it. And I wake up every day and I'm trying to make the world better. And I know that sounds a bit cheesy, but essentially that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to create a level playing field for everybody. So I'm proud of the fact that I stuck at it. Because as you can imagine, probably certainly even in your experience, Christy, it can start off as something in your bedroom. It's like, oh, you know.
Oh, it did.
Yeah.
It did.
And then everyone's like, oh, how's that little thing you're doing? Or how are you getting on with your, you know, your little thing that you've got going on? And then suddenly that little thing seems to be something everyone wants to be a part of. So, yeah, I think it does take a lot of self kind of belief and drive and commitment to see it through.
You have to be tunnel vision.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've got to be tunnel vision, because at the end of the day, oh my God, you know what? I remember when I first created my first workout program, I was actually in my ex-boyfriend's bedroom and his mum and sister were downstairs, and I didn't get out of that bedroom. I was just doing work, and he came home from work and he was like, what are you doing? I was like, look, like I just feel different about what I'm doing right now. I can't express this feeling, but I'm just going to keep on going. It's now been 3 years and I haven't looked back. You know, so it's one of those things where you just know something inside you just tells you just keep on going, and you never give up regardless of how hard shit might get. You just keep on going. But that leads me to my next question, because you do give, you know, so much help and such insightful information to businesses. But my question is, what does it actually mean in 2020 to be diverse and inclusive at work or at home? Because obviously now more people are working from home. And I truly do believe that even after COVID is kind of cleared up, people will still be working more from home. So, you know, what do you think? There's been a change? Have you seen a change since maybe when you first started to now, or not really that much of a change? Just be super honest and transparent about it.
Yeah, I think, you know what, I think so when I first started campaigning in this area, it would have been 2005. And at the time, people used the word underrepresented. We didn't really use the word. It was always underrepresented or disadvantaged people. And we didn't really use the word diversity, and we didn't think about inclusion in that way. And I think I remember when I started this journey, trying to sort of drum up support from those that had kind of gone before me. And I did get that support because I was obviously so sort of committed and passionate about it. But I also realised really quickly that those individuals had been fighting for it much, like a lot longer than, you know, much earlier, you know, than I had, in that I was, what, 18, and these people were sort of in their 40s and had been pushing for this for a really, really long time. So in a way, I felt we must have got somewhere, because I'm able to look to people in front of me. So I could see there had been some change, but I knew there hadn't been enough, because I still felt underrepresented. Mm-hmm. They still felt underrepresented, and they, you know, they'd been in the industries much, much longer than me by that point. And so in a way, I think we have made some strides. We've now got companies being a bit bolder and saying, you know, we're going to do what we can to have gender representation, for example, or we're going to support our LGBTQI staff. We're going to do what we can to give our ethnic minorities and our disabled talent the equity that they need. I think though, even with all of that, we still got such a long, long way to go. So for me, how sort of diversity looks in the workplace is it's almost redefining all of the ways that things have been done. The way things have been done in the past is not the right way. And we know that because it's created the structures and the systemic inequalities and structural inequalities that we see today. So for me, when we look at diversity, it's going back to the drawing board. It's looking at, you know, where do we attract our talent? Where do we go? How do we make sure that where we go and where we look, everyone has what it is that they need to successfully get access to these opportunities? When we recruit, how do we make sure that that is a fair process for everyone, whether you are blind, whether you are black, whether you are a Muslim, whether you are a white middle class person? How are we making sure that everyone who could possibly get access to this opportunity has everything that they need to be successful? And then when they come into the workplace, have we considered everyone, or do we work to the majority? Do we do things because this is the way we've always done them, or do we think about how to do things that includes everybody? And I think there's been a business case for diversity for a really long time, years. But I don't think it's compelling enough, because if it is, we wouldn't still be having this conversation. Yeah, and I think there's a bigger challenge in changing the hearts and minds and getting people to understand that there isn't diverse talent and then talent. It should just be talent. And if we
That's how I see it. Yeah. So that's how I perceive it. I perceive it as, this isn't a tick box mechanism.
Yeah.
This isn't just... You know, someone did ask me the other day, they were like, how many people of color do you have working for you? And I was like, listen, I have anyone you can imagine working for me, from white to black to Asian to homosexual to straight to French to this to that, right? And I sat back and I thought, also, these people are qualified, you know, like... Fundamentally, the most important thing for me is making sure you get the right person for the role.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And maybe that's, for me, be honest with me, like, this is an open discussion. Maybe for me, I've got that wrong. But whether, you know, a black woman or a white woman come to me, I'm going to look at their resume. That's the first thing I look at. You know, I look at what their qualifications are. If someone has 20 years experience, over 1 year experience, they've worked with X amount of companies and got them to X amount of levels, then you're going to steer more to that direction. Right?
Yeah, well, and absolutely, that's what it should be. I always say that if you're any employer and you've got a job description or an idea of what it is that you're looking for in the person you're about to hire, then the only thing that you need to be concerned with when interviewing or assessing someone is their ability to fulfill that those skill sets that you need in your business. So, yeah. Which is why I always say that if you go back to the drawing board and you level the playing field for everyone at each step of the process. So from attraction, recruitment, retaining them, developing and promoting them within the organisation, and we're just looking at skills, talents, capabilities and that, then actually we would see a lot more diversity. In fact, what we're doing as a society at the moment is we are trying to find people who we find familiar to us, because people that we're not familiar with breed fear in us. They could potentially be a risk. They feel like you might say something wrong with them. You might not understand them. So you want to get someone as close to what you're used to as possible in order to feel comfortable with the decision that you've made. And I can't tell you how many times we've observed interviews where the interviewer is spending most of their time trying to find something that they have in common personally with the person in front of them, as opposed to trying to establish what skill set they have that's needed for that business. And an example of that is, I remember observing an interview, and at the end of it, I said, "So what do you think of that person?" And they said, "You know, I don't think they're right." And I said, "Oh, why is that?" And they said, "You know, they weren't able to demonstrate, you know, these particular skills." And I said, "You didn't ask one question that would have allowed them to demonstrate that."
Yeah, that's so bad. And do you know what? I can safely tell you that when, you know, referring, I can only refer back to me because I can't discuss anybody else's position. But, you know, when I first ever employed my first team member at Tone & Sculpt, Joanna, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I'm going to be so honest with you. Like, I was 23. I had just finished law school. I've never led a team. I've never managed a team. All I knew is this company was growing out of capacity. I didn't know. All I knew is I needed help, but I didn't know how to genuinely employ people. And I was asking all the wrong questions. I was shooting myself in the foot, had to let people go, bring new people in. But now, you know, now there's 20 employees at Tone & Sculpt. And we're still hiring like 6 more because we still need more hands on deck. And the process now to what it was before is a completely different story. We don't look at you and say, damn, am I going to be able to have a couple beers with this person at the end of a workday? I look at you and go, are you going to help all my incredible clients achieve their goals, be happy and satisfied? That's my questions. Because at the end of the day, I need to know whether you are a team player, you have the same common vision, and you're going to help this community. That's my fundamental goals. Whereas before, I would be like, oh my God, does this person like me? Does this person like me? And I was like, why do I care? Like, no, it goes beyond this now. It's like, no, we need to have the same common vision. We need to work as a team. We need to progress. And we need to get to that common vision, you know?
No, definitely, totally. And I think that there is something really beautiful in that, because a lot of companies and people are not happy to just admit that they don't know those things. And actually, if they did admit it, they would do a lot better at, you know, in the way that you were just so frank and said, I didn't know what I was doing. I was only 23. I think if organizations sort of said, look, this isn't my, you know, my strength, it would be great for me to find a way to create another way of doing this and understanding how to interview people properly. There is this honesty that you just shared there, which was, you know, I don't know something, how do I learn to know it, how do I get to know it, how do I make sure that I am in a position where I'm not looking for similarities in the people that I'm speaking to, but I am actually looking for talent and a set of skills. And I think a lot of businesses aren't confident yet at all in saying that, in kind of going, no, you know what, we're not.
I think they're scared. I feel like, do you know what? I feel like everyone's scared to discuss this. Like they're scared to ask the questions of, you know, tell, like, if I was to ask you a question, Joanna, from a company's perspective, from a company owner, what do you think, you know, can impact positive change and diversity in a workplace? People are scared to ask those questions because they don't know whether it's too much or too little. And that's what I personally think is one of the biggest problems, being so scared to ask such open and honest questions. If you don't ask questions, you will never learn, you will never progress. You can't sit there and treat diversity as something scared to discuss. It should be an open discussion so we can share ideas and we can progress. If as a business owner, I sit there and I go, oh, Joanna, like I'm really scared to ask you these questions, I'm never going to get anywhere. So I have to ask you questions like, right, you know, what is it like being a woman of color in business? How would you like companies to approach certain situations? What would you recommend? Because at the end of the day, if we don't have these open discussions with one another and we're totally honest and totally transparent and keep in communication, nothing can ever be achieved. Yes, it is the company's responsibility and the individual's responsibility to be immensely educated, to support and to elevate and to amplify women of color and women of all backgrounds. But it is also our job to ask questions, regardless if you're a woman of color, if you're white, if you're Muslim, if you're Christian. You should openly have conversations and discuss things with one another, because you might give me an idea or an opinion that I haven't even thought about, and vice versa. So I think there needs to be an element of pushing fear aside and understanding that, yes, things might be uncomfortable, but they're supposed to be. Because when you're uncomfortable, it leads to action. Action leads to change. It's the same process in fitness. You go into a gym as a beginner and you start shitting yourself. Right? You're like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm in the gym. I'm in a new environment. I feel hella uncomfortable. I'm going to walk out. You walking out, you're never going to achieve anything. You conquering, feeling uncomfortable and just doing anything you can is better than doing nothing at all. And then you're going to get better and better and better at it. So that's the way I see it personally.
I'm totally with you. I don't think there's anything wrong with like making mistakes. And I think the only thing you should really fear is fear, because actually there's a lot of opportunity to learn if you're open to making mistakes. And I always say there's no failures, so there's just lessons. And so I think even in the moments where it is awkward, I'm about to put out a small clip on just sort of addressing some of the ways that the workplace can help some of their ethnic minority staff at the moment. And I've just tried my best to be progressive and productive as possible. But I'm also open to the fact that there may be people that suggest and think there are other ways in which we could do some of those things outside of my suggestions. And I think the heart of diversity is the fact that everyone is allowed to have their opinion and it be valued, and it be relevant to their experiences and it be valued. So I'm totally with you on that.
Oh, okay. I love conversations like this. I think these are really like important conversations to have in society, as one-on-ones within your family, because at the end of the day, like, you know, there were, I recently spoke to you about Danielle Wilson, and when I did my Q&A with her, you know, she said something that just put things in perspective. She goes, an individual may not be a racist, right? But there's a difference between being non-racist and anti-racist. So you may do things wholeheartedly with all honesty, but it may have never been a consideration to you before. Whereas being anti-racist, you're considering things more. You're more woke, as they say. And I think that it's so important to have these discussions with the people around you, with new people, and to really amplify the importance of diversity and equality and ways that we can make change together. Because listen, As much as I may try to make a change, and I always will do, and so will you, there's so much more power in coming together and really doing this as like a combined effort. A million voices is more powerful than one voice, in my opinion, anyway. My question to you is, now, this is a bit of a strong question. What is it like being a woman of color in business? Like, do you find it that your experiences are different? Have you seen people treat you differently to what they may treat a white woman? And just be really honest about it, Joanna. Like, be brutal, be honest. Give me your thoughts.
I think there's lots of where to start with this. So
it's a fully loaded question. But I feel like a lot of people would have been scared to ask that question.
No, I think you're right. And it's a important question. I think I've had to learn to carry myself in a certain way, because there were already perceptions on what I would behave like because I was a black woman. So if I was assertive, it all sounds a bit cliche, and you've probably heard it all before, but it's very real that, you know, that I would be aggressive. If I was assertive, it was more aggressive as opposed to me just having a really strong opinion
on something. Yeah.
I've learned how to speak in a way that gets my point across and doesn't allow opportunity for people to label that as aggressive or with a chip on my shoulder or any of those things. My friend's mum once said to me that when they go high with their voice, you should go low. And it's kind of the opposite of what Michelle Obama said, but it's in a different context. So my friend's mum was referring to the fact that in meetings, if someone's getting impassioned and they're not, you know, a black person or a black woman, it's really important that you don't raise your voice to them. You need to keep your voice really low and at the same considered level, because then you are taking what you're saying is listened to, as opposed to it's looking like bickering and another angry black lady. And it's a shame that we have to be given those sorts of kind of pieces of advice, but it's been used against us so much that our passion is aggression, as opposed to our white counterparts, for example, who could sometimes be incredibly unprofessional. And that would still come across as, you know, an acceptable way.
That makes me so mad listening to that.
Yeah.
That honestly makes me so mad, because it's like, you know, it's one thing being a woman in business, and then it's another thing being a woman of color in business. It's like, as a woman in business, I feel like, anyway, I sometimes have to dim my shine. And this is a discussion I'll have in another podcast. And that's just me being honest. That's how I feel sometimes. But then being a woman of color, it's like you got to dim your shine times 100. Because just because you're passionate about something, it comes across as aggressive. It's ridiculous. Like, it makes me mad. I'm like, no, let a woman speak. Let her speak. Let her voice her opinion. It's not aggression. It's passion.
Yeah. You know? And you get that a lot. And you get a lot of... like, being a woman is difficult anyway, in that
it is in business.
I'm always spoken to, like, in a patronizing tone sometimes. Mm-hmm. They'll say something to me as if I couldn't possibly have known it beforehand. Do you know what I mean?
Like you couldn't have achieved it on your own.
Yeah, or they just say something they think is like really profound, and I'm like, obviously. Are you genuinely saying that to me as if that's news? Like, I get that a lot, and I find it quite embarrassing. I feel embarrassed for the person, because I think they assume that because I look younger than I am, and also because they make assumptions about what a sort of a working class kid might know or a black kid might know, that they talk to you as if you're just, you know, you're very stupid. And I'm not. So sometimes I find that really frustrating, and that happens a lot. And I'm trying to think of an example. Hopefully it will come to me. But where that sort of happened. But sometimes they'll invite me along to something that's maybe black tie and say, you know, it's black tie, do you know what that means? And I'm like, of course, like, come on, like,
oh, Joanna, don't, you're infuriating.
Yeah, I get like really silly questions like that, or I'll get like, what you should do now that you've met them is you should follow it up with an email and say, obviously I was going to follow it up. Like, you're saying things to me that...
Yeah, patronising.
Patronising, yeah. And
you know what? You're you're proving people wrong, and you shouldn't have to prove people wrong. That is my point. Like, you should never have to prove someone wrong. But there is so much power, you know, as an individual, when someone tells you that you can't do something and then you do it, but you do it to a whole new level that they didn't even think that was capable for them to do it. So, you know, like, look at all the achievements that you've made, and, you know, you've literally sat back and been like, okay, I can continue to do this. I don't want to continue to do this. So I'm going to, you know, that resilience that you have in your mind, that power that you have, you've just taken it and been like, mind my language, but fuck the odds around me. I'm going to achieve what I want to achieve because I know that I can, and I need to stand up for what's right. And I need to stand up for young women of color who want to look up to you. Like, do you know how amazing it's going to be for women of color, especially a young girl, to look up to someone like you for everything that you've achieved, everything that you stand for, and everything that you continue to do? And, you know, that's why I wanted you on this podcast so much, because I wanted to amplify what you do. I wanted to elevate what you do. Not that you need it, by the way, you're smashing it on your own, but because, like I said, coming together and hearing what you do and what you stand for is so much more powerful than just continuing to do it by yourself. So, yeah, you've taken everything and you've just been like, no, I'm going to do this instead.
No, thank you. And I think just to add to that, one of the things that I would love people to kind of take from that question when you say, you know, what's it like to be a Black woman in business, is use your voice, and don't let people make you think that your voice or your experiences are lesser than. I've always had this thing of, why do they, like, who said that you're smarter than me, or who said that your opinion is better than mine, or like, who's actually said that? And I kind of think that there is this, because of the way that society is structured, there is this assumption that, you know, if you speak and talk in a particular way, that clearly you're of more value. And I think what I would ask everyone to think is, no, like, we're all of value, and your experiences and what you have to say and what you think are of value. And so in any room that you'll ever find yourself in, even if your voice is sort of shaking in fear, still use it, because the chances are that a lot of the people in that room, if you think about it, with all the structures that we have that are against most of the different minority groups, and it isn't just about colour, but we've had to usually work 10 times as harder to be in that room. There are plenty of mediocre people from more well-off backgrounds and more privileged backgrounds that are in situations who haven't had to do half as much as us. So, you know, when you're there, you should definitely feel like, I have absolutely earned my right to be here, and then some. And sometimes what you may have achieved in your small, you know, you might only be 21, but in your 21 years, because of life experiences, is sometimes more than the person sat opposite you who may not have had those experiences, has experienced at all yet, because they haven't had to find that level of resilience. So I just think, you know, when you're, whoever you are and whatever background you're from, like, use your voice, your experiences to educate people on the misconception they might have about you. So quite often, to go to a boardroom situation, I sit on a lot of boards, and I used to think, why am I sitting here? Like, why do they want to hear what I have to say? And then I actually realized, when I used to hear what everyone else was saying, no, I've got something complete. I think something completely different to that. So, like, I'm gonna say it. And I used to think to myself, if I don't say it, if I'm the only person that these individuals get to speak to in this way, one-on-one, then I am their example of those people. I'll be the one that they go, oh no, I know this, you know, this young Black woman, and she's perfectly articulate and bright, you know. And you know, sometimes people will use that one person they know to kind of define all of those people that identify with them. So I think, you know, just when you're in that position, educate them on, you know, tell them something they don't know, show them something that they won't have assumed about you. Because I think it's not until we start challenging those biases that we will get anywhere. And you probably might think, why should I? Like, why is it my job to do that? It's not your job. It really isn't. It's actually their job to go off and educate themselves. But while you have got their ear, why not make it worthwhile?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's not about also proving people wrong, by the way, guys. It's, I think what me and Joanna are trying to say in a nutshell is, if you don't speak up, it's actually going to hurt you more. And that's the way I see it as well. It's like whenever I have an issue about something or a problem or something's upsetting me, whether that's in my personal life with people in my personal life or within my company, I will vocalize how I feel. Because at the end of the day, as crazy as I may sound, I know that I've let it all out and I feel better within myself. And that information, that person that I'm relaying it to, that's now their responsibility. I'm not going to sit back and keep everything in, bogged down, and just suffocate myself, because you end up exploding. And I've done that as well. So yeah, I think it's super important. And I think it's super important to have these discussions like we have had on this podcast today, guys. And I think that if there's one piece of advice I can give you to anyone that's listening at home, just please don't be scared. Like, I know things can be uncomfortable, but don't be scared. Speak about things that you want to speak about. Vocalize what you want to vocalize, because at the end of the day, you're only going to help better yourself, better your understanding. And being expressive, there is nothing wrong with being expressive. Being vocal, there is absolutely nothing wrong with being vocal. And if you want to scream and shout what you believe in, scream and shout what you believe in. Because at the end of the day, if someone tells you you're wrong, okay, thank you so much for your opinion. I'm going to continue believing and doing what I believe in. So Joanna, thank you so much for being on this podcast, because honestly, like, it's been such a pleasure speaking to you.
Oh, and you too. Thank you
so much for being so honest and transparent and just vocalizing exactly how you feel. So thank you so, so much.
No, thank you. And yeah, just if anyone ever needs any advice around this, I know that there's a lot going on at the moment that might be causing a lot of sort of concern and worry, then by all means, just reach out. And I think there's always a way to get people on side. And sometimes when you need to do that, one of my tips is try and work out what they're motivated by and what they measure their success on. And then in your ideas, try to ensure that there is a kind of a benefit to those people. And then you'll start to see more people buying in. And it sounds a bit tactical and it sounds like it shouldn't be something you have to do. But actually, sometimes in order to get buy-in, you have to talk to the things that are important to other people and what they'll care about, and include that in some of the points that you're making to ensure that you get their support. So you want, in this moment, you want allies, and you want to have conversations with people who don't necessarily agree with you. And in that, you want to educate them and get them to see your point of view. They may not end up agreeing, but they'll start to see the value in the view that you have. So just work out what it is they need to be convinced of that.
Exactly. And I think that was so, like, perfectly said to a perfectly put podcast. So thank you so much, Joanna. I'm gonna speak to you soon and shortly. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening in. Make sure that you are following Joanna, and like she said, if you have any advice, send her a DM, send her an email, and don't hesitate. thank you so much for listening in. I love you always and forever, and I'll catch you in the next podcast. Bye, everyone. Bye, Joanna.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Chrissy.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.